Thank you very much. Thank you very much for the invitation to speak here at the Fields Institute. So as Rick says, then I'm going to discuss diagram spaces in connection with symmetric spectra. So and everything I say is joint work with Stefan Sagave. So this project is something that we were inspired to pursue because we were interested in topological Hoxha homology and logarithmic structure in topology in the sense of John Roughness. And it turned out that in this, in order to study this subject, then the notion of a diagram space became very, very useful. So what I wanted to try in this talk is to speak not so much about these applications, but to more try to advertise these methods in their own right. So when I have written up my dream of the plan of the lecture, so first I will discuss infinite loop spaces, but in terms of those I spaces, so I'm going to explain what that is. So then I'm going to say how we can perform some operations on infinite loop spaces in terms of this new diagram space approach. So I'm going to talk about units and group completion in terms of I spaces. So one and two is like trying to convince you that the category of I spaces is a convenient framework for doing something that we do already. While in three, I hope to convince you that this idea of diagram spaces in connection with spectra is useful for doing something that we have not done before. So I'll get to say what that is. So the point there will be that we have already now a good notion of the units of a ring spectrum, but what about the greater units? What about the units of the topological K-theory spectrum, for example? Shouldn't this unit be able to see the Bott periodicity map? So, but first, let's start with one. So what is I? So I is for injective. So I is a category of finite sets. N, so I'll take the finite sets of the standard form. And injective maps. So I allow here the empty set, so which I'm going to write as zero. So this is a symmetric monoidal category. And somehow the obvious way. So you just concatenate two finite order sets in the usual way, and let the symmetric structure be the obvious shuffle map. So an I space then, an I space is by definition then simply a functor here, a functor from this category to I into spaces. And this framework is such that you can choose S to mean topological spaces or simplicial sets. So, and that can be topological or simplicial. So the theory is so formal that that it works exactly the same in the two cases. Okay. So then we define a functor category. Functor category of I spaces, functors from this category I to spaces. And as usual, when you have the domain category as a symmetric monoidal, then you get an adduced symmetric monoidal structure on the functor category. So this will be symmetric monoidal. So if you're giving two such functors, then there's the usual convolution product, so which at a finite set n takes you can define as a colimit of those, let's see, n, let's call it n2, where I take the colimit over the of the category, so the overcategory determined by the monoidal structure of the category I. So I just go through this a little quick because it looks like something that many of you have seen in a very, so these are very standard constructions that occur in many different situations. So you may think of this box times product there as kind of similar to the tensor product of graded modules. You somehow take the union over all the contributions where the indices sum up to the index where you, where you are at. Okay. So we have a symmetric monoidal category with this structure, and so we have monoids in this symmetric monoidal category, and I'm going to say that such a monoid is called an I-space monoid, so this is the definition, is a monoid in this category. And this is, so if one unravels the universal property of this product here, this is quite explicit. It's given by, well, an I space, so it's a sequence of spaces, and then there should be a unit in the zero space, and there should be an associative multiplication. Which should be somehow associative in the obvious. In the obvious sense. Okay. So we have a symmetric monoidal category, and there comes a definition. A map in this category, so a map of I spaces, that is just a natural transformation, is an I equivalence if the induced map of homotropy colimits is a weak homotropy equivalence of spaces. Oops. In the category of spaces. So here, this is my notation here for the homotropy colimits. So I write, it's kind of a convenient notation instead of writing ho colim all the time to have this should be an H. Okay, so so this is an I equivalence, and I want to make I equivalences, the weak equivalences in a model category on I spaces. So we do that. There is a model structure on I spaces with the weak equivalences equal to those I equivalences, and then such that the following holds, such that the usual adjunction here, though, the colimit of a diagram, and the so this goes down to the category of spaces and the constant. So we can take the colimit over I and get a space, and we can take the constant I space and we will get a well, we will get an I space. And there should be a equivalent equivalence. So what I have described so far is from the point of homotropy category, I have introduced a new category, somehow a larger category, which has the same homotropy theory as the category of spaces.
What happened to the tensor product under this equation?
So the tensor product here, this corresponds to the Cartesian product of spaces here. So this one is a strong symmetric monoidal. And this one is also, I guess. So far, I have not really done anything useful. So I've just defined a new category which looks more complicated to spaces and said that it's they are equivalent. So there must be some advantage of this category here. And this is what I come to now. Let me say one thing here, and that is that this passage of passing to weak equivalences equal to I equivalences is very similar to the construction of the stable homotropy category. So this work here is formally very similar to the construction of the symmetric spectra. So and this notion of an I equivalence is the analog of a stable equivalence of symmetric spectra. Okay. So the advantage of this category comes now. So I'm not so good at those. I'm better to writing them in sec than on a blackboard. But this is supposed to be a C, and this is supposed to be an S. And this should be the category of commutative I-space monoids. So in other words, it's a commutative monoid in the symmetric monoidal category SI. And so this also has a model structure, the positive model structure on SI lifts to a model structure on the commutative monoids. And again, the weak equivalences are the I equivalences. So with weak equivalences equal to I equivalences. So this is also something which is very similar to the situation for symmetric spectra. So there's a well-known issue with defining a model category of commutative symmetric spectra, and that is that the fibrant objects cannot be the omega spectrum, because then one would have a contradiction with the fact that a commutative monoid is a generalized Feynman-MacLane space. And we face the same issue here, and the solution is also the same, so it's just Smith's trick of defining a positive model structure. So in the positive model structure, a fibrant object is an object such that all the structure maps are weak equivalences except those that involve x0, those that involve the initial term of the I space. Okay. So we have a model category, and I can say something about the homotropy category. So here comes the first theorem, which is due to Sagave and myself. And this says that there is a chain of Quillen equivalences from this category here. Oops. The commutative I-space monoids, well, it's a chain of equivalences to the category of E-infinity spaces. And this actually, so the way that we set this up, this actually works for any operator. So you can, so this chain of equivalences, you can put any infinity operator in, but somehow the Barrett-Eggers operator is particularly somehow. The Barrett-Eggers operator fits particularly nicely in this context, in this following sense. So, if we use the Barrett-Eggers operator, then we can say somehow what the correspondence is. So, if we have a commutative I-space monoid, this corresponds to the corresponding homotropy colimit inside infinity spaces. So what the only thing I'm saying is that if you have a commutative I-space monoid, then if you use the usual Bausch-Lipkin model of the homotropy colimit, then it will have an explicit action of the Barrett-Eggers operator. So I think of objects in the I spaces as having an underlying space given by the homotropy colimit of the diagram. So let's see some examples of how this plays out. So so here's an example. Let X be a connected base. Then we can define an I space by sending n to x to the nth power. This is a commutative I space monoid. And what is the underlying space? Well, then you should evaluate the homotropy colimit over M inside the category of injective maps. And it turns out that since I assumed X to be connected, this is a model for Q of X. So of course we know that, well, more precisely, it's a Barrett-Eggers, it's homotropy equivalent to the, in general, it's homotropy equivalent to the Barrett-Eggers construction of X, and if X is connected, that's equivalent to Q of X. So this the infinity space, which we know very well, lives to this very simple I space here, given simply by, so here the monoidal structure is of course just that to take the product of, so the monoidal structure maps are isomorphisms, or homeomorphisms in this case. So xm times xn is equal to x to the n plus n. So here's another example. We can map N to BON, so the classifying space of the orthogonal group. And in this case, the homotropy colimit over I of BON is just a model for BON, for stable vector bundles. So again, something which is an E-infinity space, but we know it's not equivalent to a commutative monoid, lives to this commutative monoid here. So here the monoid maps are just induced by the block composition of matrices. And finally, what if we do something similar, but we don't take an we don't take the real numbers. What if we take a discrete ring? Then we can define a similar I space by mapping N into GL N of A. This will again be a commutative I space monoid. And in this case, the underlying space of that one, so for N, so it's important to take the homotopy collimate over all the morphisms of the category I. And the morphisms of the category I involves a lot of automorphisms. It involves all the symmetric groups. So therefore, this is potentially a complicated homotopy collimate. If I had only taken the homotopy collimate over the natural numbers, I would not have gotten an infinity space. So which infinity space is built out of the... it should not have been... Right, this is correct also, but I want to take the classifying space. Sorry. So which space is built out of the classifying spaces? This is, of course, algebraic K-theory. So this is equivalent to Quillen's plus construction on BGLA. So somehow the upshot of this is that because the definition of an I-space monoid is so simple, there are a number of examples that naturally falls into this category. Of course, there's also examples of infinity spaces which does not have such a simple description. In this case, this theorem here is reassuring because it tells you that we can always find a commutative I-space monoid which is equivalent, even though we don't know exactly what it looks like. So let's look at some applications of that. So let's look at the units of ring spectrum. So units of symmetric ring spectrum. And I think actually I'm only going to talk about commutative ring spectra, even though it works the same in general. So let this be the category of symmetric spectra. And I somehow would imagine that in this forum I don't have to define so carefully what that is for a category, so I'm not going to write it up. It's a spectrum in the naive sense, in the sense that it's a sequence of base spaces with suspension maps. On the n space, we have an action of the symmetric group on n letters, and the iterated structure maps, they are somehow suitable equivariant with respect to those group actions. This is a symmetric monoidal under the smash product. With a unit, the sphere spectrum, and we would like to understand the units of the monoid. So let this be the commutative symmetric ring spectrum. So that is the commutative monoids in this category. And let's try to understand what we should mean by the units of such a ring spectrum. Well, so there are already good notions of the units. So Peter May and a long list of collaborators and co-workers have built up an extensive theory of units of ring spectra in topology. So what I'm going to discuss now here is just somehow an equivalent way in terms of diagram spaces and symmetric spectra. So the thing we want to model is the algebraic notion of the units of a ring spectrum, of course. So if we have a commutative ring, then this is related to commutative monoids, which is related to commutative groups by a junction. So here we can take the monoid ring and if we're giving a commutative ring, we can take its underlying multiplicative monoid, and here we can include the groups in the monoids, and we can take a monoid A here and map it to the units A star sitting inside A. So the taking the units of a commutative monoid is of course right adjoint to the inclusion function. So now in topology, we want to do something similar. And for a reason that I have mentioned already, somehow the most obvious, or the first attempt, the most obvious attempt doesn't work. So the most obvious attempt would be to take a commutative symmetric ring spectra here, map it down to commutative, either simplicial or topological monoids, and then to the corresponding groups. Well, I guess it fails for several reasons. So one reason is the problem that we had before, that we cannot represent E infinity spaces by commutative monoids in spaces. So therefore, what I want to do is that I want to here put commutative monoids in I spaces instead, and then get a similar chain of adjunctions. So another point is, of course, that we don't really want to have strict inverses in this topological framework. So let's say that, so let's make a definition that we say that a I space monoid is group-like if pi zero of the underlying space is a group. And then let me just write up the similar adjunction here. So here we start with commutative symmetric ring spectra. And here we had commutative high space monoids. And here we have group-like monoids. Group-like monoids in this category here. And we can then define analogous adjunctions here. So here we have a notion of the suspension spectrum of an I space, and here we have the notion of the of the loops here, and how are they defined? Well, the suspension spectrum of an I space, so in spectrum degree n, this is simply the n-sphere smashed with the n-space of this I space monoid. Whereas this I space functor here evaluated symmetric ring spectrum at degree n is equal to loops n of Rn, like this here. So again, the left adjoint is a strong symmetric monoidal, and the right at, wait, why did I do that? Okay. Both spaces, okay. Very good. You are allowed to say something before I turn this 10 times. Okay, so let's see. So the point here is the one that I tried to explain before, that since we cannot represent commutative, since we cannot represent E infinity spaces as commutative monoids, we will have to involve all the loop space omega n of Rn in this construction here, if you want to have something which captures E infinity spaces. The classical approach then is that one should not stay in here. One should take the co-limit and then go into spaces and get an action of the little cube subarray, get an infinity space. But what we suggest is that it's somehow better to stay in the, so to not pass to the co-limit, but live in this diagram world here and live in this this category of commutative monoids. So the other adjunction here is, so one is just inclusion, and the other one is defined in exactly the same way. So A is mapped to the homotropy units in A star inside A. So you simply plug out those components in each degree, which are mapped to a unit in when you pass to the homotropy co-limit. And let's see. And yes, so here's the definition that we propose as a notion of the unit. PL1 of the symmetric, commutative symmetric ring spectrum R is by definition this omega I of R, and then somehow the corresponding homotropy units in there. And so remark, is it agreement with the literature? Well, it is. So this notion of units agrees with that of Peter May and a long list of other names here. And this has recently actually been proved by a mathematician called John Lind. So we're not really doing something new here. It's just that from our experience with working with these things, this has been a very useful approach. I wanted to say a little bit more about this adjunction here. So the forgetful functor was a right adjunct that was established, but it's also, in fact, the inclusion functor is a left adjunct, but the inclusion is also a right adjunct and has the group completion as a left adjunct. So I want to discuss how one passes to group completion in this notion of I-space monoids. So what does the left adjoint of the forgetful functor look like? Well, it's not really, in the way that we set it up, it's not really a strict left adjoint. But we do get a kind of a conceptual view upon group completion. So let's see. So Well, so let me just say the theorem. It's this, again due to part of this project here. And well, it says the following. There is a Gauss field localization of this category here. So now I use the name of the, I write this here not only for the category, but also with this positive model structure, which I discussed before. And with this particular model structure, there is a localization, which I write with a group subindex such that. Well, first of all, so the vibrant objects in this category here are the vibrant objects in the original model structure that are in fact group complete. And furthermore, group completion, or let's say vibrant replacement, is a model of group completion. So the point is that one can, so one knows that one can group complete infinity spaces, and then this should be again be an infinity space. And what we suggest here is to somehow give a conceptual approach to that. So what is a Gauss field localization? Well, a Gauss field localization is a new model structure on the same category. So this here is the same category of commutative I-space monoids, but there are more weak equivalences, and they are, this has the same co-vibrations, and there are more weak equivalences, and therefore fewer vibrant objects. And here you can see, so there's a new condition of being vibrant. Excuse me?
How do you describe the incidence? I mean, of course, you can describe the incidence by saying that it becomes after group completion, but then you're using group completion to define the model structure. I mean, how do you describe the weak equivalences? It's not an objection, I'm just.
Yeah. What do you say, Stephen? Do we have a good? Right. Yeah. So one can. Right. So one can. Yeah. So if one takes a. If one passes to the classifying spaces of the underlying spaces, then this should be an equivalent. I guess would be. Isn't that a good way to say it? So you pass to the underlying space, then you get an infinity space and view the map of classifying spaces, and then this should be an equivalent. Okay, so I wanted to say one more thing here, namely that the homotopy category of this here. Is equivalent to the full subcategory of group-like objects in the homotopy category of commutative I-space monoids, which is the same as the homotopy category of the infinity spaces. So there's not like a model category of group like I-space monoids, but with change in the model structure, somehow we get the homotopy category that plays this role. Okay. In fact, there's a fairly simple, so one only has to localize one map. It's somehow the canonical map from the free commutative I-space monoid on a canonical I-space. Maybe I can just write this quickly here. So construction. So there's only one map one has to localize, and that is the following. One looks at the three commutative I-space monoids generated by something. You know, better write out what I mean here. This here, where if one of star is the discrete I space, it just takes an set n to the injective map from 1 into n, which is again n, of course. And so you can map this here into, then you can first take the B of that one in using the monoidal structure, so using this box times product, and then you can take the level-wise loop. And then, in order to be honest, you would have to do one thing more. You would have to choose a vibrant replacement of this classifying space here in order for the loops to capture the right homotopy type. But because we work in a category of commutative monoids, somehow the usual group completion that we use for spaces, namely first apply the bar construction and then the loops, also works in this setting. So we have a map of commutative I-space monoids here, and then you choose a co-fibrant replacement of that one, and this is what you localize with respect to. So this here, of course, what is the underlying map of topological spaces? Well, evaluating the homotopy collimator of this here is underlying map. The homotopy collimator of this here is just this turned union of the B sigma n's, and this is just the usual group completion, which is equal to QS0 by the Barrett-Preddy Quillen theorem. So we group complete the thing that has to be group completed, and then we somehow group complete, then we have localized enough already. So this was point two. So this was what we knew how to do already. But I hope that this somehow should give a new approach to that. But in three here, I'm going to describe something which is new, I think. And that's the notion of graded units. So let R be a commutative symmetric ring spectrum. And let's not assume it's connected. there's one deficiency of the notion of units that I described before, and that is that it doesn't distinguish the units of a ring spectrum and its connective cover. So we would like to have a notion of graded units, which, for example, for the topological K-theorem, should give something different from what the definition I gave already. And the idea is simple enough, namely make this whole collection here, omega m Rn, for m and n positive integers, a commutative monoid in some symmetric monoidal category. In this way, somehow, if we allow for varying both m and n, we should get something which captures also the negative homotopy groups of the spectrum. And the units should then be the, let's say, the homotropy invertible components. This is somehow the idea. From another point of view, so another way of looking at this here, omega n of Rn, is of course to say that it's maps of R modules from m suspension of R into an n suspension of R, which is maps of R modules from suspension of m minus n of R into R. So we can also see that graded units should be graded stable equivalences. Of R modules. So for example, we would like to see that the equivalent from the second suspension of the topological complex K-theory spectrum should give and should somehow contribute to those units here. So what kind of symmetric monoidal category should this object live in? So let J be equal to sigma inverse sigma, which the Grayson Quillen construction on sigma. I think sigma is. So this is the category of finite sets and bijections. Finite sets and bijections. And instead of recording for you what the definition of the Grayson-Quillen construction is, let me just say explicitly what this is. So objects are pairs in 1, n2. Where n1 and n2, they are objects in the category I. And morphisms from m1, n2 to n1, n2, this is should now be a triple of data. It should be given by an alpha 1, an alpha 2, and a rho. A where here alpha 1 and alpha 2 are easy to describe. So alpha 1 is a morphism in I from M1 to N1, and similar for alpha 2, so they are morphisms in I. And this row here from is a bijection from, you look at the complement of this map here inside N1. So this is just a finite number of points inside this set here. And this should be identified with the complement of alpha 2. This should be a bijection. So this is just spelling out the definition of the Grayson-Quillen construction, that it has this simple form here. And so here comes the construction then defined, or let's say, just say we have a function omega j, let's call it, from this category j into spaces, which takes n1 comma n2 and then maps it to omega n1 not j, so it depends on r, so I should put the commutative symmetric ring spectrum r inside, so it's giving omega n of r of n2. And so this is a clever observation of Sagawa here, that somehow you have two variables here. You have the N1 variable and you have the N2 variable. So you could think that you could define a function on the category I cross I by somehow using alpha 1 to define suspension in this coordinate and alpha 2 to define suspension in this coordinate. But Stefan Sagawa observed that it doesn't work. You need exactly this bijection here in order to make this functorial. So it's a very nice that somehow the Grayson-Quillen construction plays so precisely into this combinatorial framework. So this here, this is then in fact a commutative J space monoid. And now we can do exactly the same kind of adjunction as we did before. So you would have, maybe it's gone now, but there will be the same kind of adjunction relating commutative symmetric ring spectrum with group-like commutative J-space monoids. And we define the graded units GL, now I put that J up here too. So J is not really, so I was good because I is for injective. J is just because it comes after I. There's not really any other reason for the use of J. So the graded R modulus is, so we take this functor omega J of R, and then we again take in the same way the homotropy units, those that map to unit in the homotropy colimit over J. And this, Is it my spelling, which is a...
You haven't set up the monoidal structure in J.
Chromatic J space monoid. Yes. So, So J is symmetric monoidal. Just you can say either because the Grayson-Quillen construction takes symmetric monoidal to symmetric monoidal, or you can say that it's, you can simply write up explicitly, it's just given by the monoidal structure on I concatenation, and then by concatenating those bijections here also. And so using this symmetric monoidal structure, this implies that this category of J spaces is also symmetric in order. And again, I say that a J space monoid is a monoid in this category here, and so on. So the notation is exactly for as for I spaces.
Do you use a symmetric model structure on S to the J?
Yes, so this works exactly the same as for I spaces. So there's it works, so the one sets up the model structure in the same way, and the model structure leads to a model structure on commutative monoids in here.
Which is again equivalent to S.
No. So here comes something. What is it equivalent to? So why is this here a good notion of graded units? So let me use this last 5 minutes to explain that. So and the motivation again comes from algebra. So you can take this here. In algebra, and now I mean very simple algebra. So in algebra, a graded monoid is the same thing, so logically same thing as, let's call it A equal to, so it's given by graded pieces A n for n greater equal to for n in the integers. It's logically the same thing as a map from A to the additive group of integers and monoid map. So if you're giving a monoid map here, then you define the graded piece AN. So if you have a monoid map P here, then you define AN to be equal to P inverse of N. So this is simply, right, this is simply the same thing. So now in our case here, in topology, so we know what the classifying space is of this category J by the Barrett Preddy Quillen theorem. We know that that BJ is a model for QS0. And it's customary in this days here to think of Q0 is the additive, maybe I'll put this in quotation marks, is additive group of the sphere space. So what is a graded object in topology? Well, so here's a theorem due to, again, it's part of this project, which says that there is a chain of Quillen equivalences which describes this category of commutative J space monoids in terms of the infinity spaces over BJ. So it's similar to what happens for I spaces, you can say, because the I category I has an initial object, so the classifying space is contractible. So I could also say that the commutative I space monoid was the same as E infinity spaces over a point. But if you have a more complicated category such as J, this is the right this is the right answer. So in this way, somehow we have the topological notion of commutative objects sitting over BJ. And this is somehow how we can think of commutative J space monoid as really being these kind of graded objects over the over QS Q0. to S0. And let me just say, let me just end up by somehow, is it now a reasonable notion of units we have here? Well, if R is a positive omega spectrum, then we have a homotropy Cartesian diagram. A homotropy which fits here, which so we map down to Bj, and here we are in here we take the homotropy colimit over this category of this J space monoid here, and here the fiber of this one will be omega m r n, here a point here, here have we have m comma n for if for all m comma n such that n is positive. So we want to be in the situation where we have an somehow where the structure maps are equivalent. Excuse me?
One day should be an R.
Oh, it should be an R. Thank you. Right. So I just yes. So I just want to say something about the homotropy type of the homotropy colimit here, because I'm essentially done now. So under this equivalence here, of course, again the commutative I space monoid, J space monoid, is mapped to the homotropy colimit, mapping to the homotropy colimit of a point, which is Bj. So it's again given by the map of homotropy colimit. So this is somehow the underlying graded map. And it's clear from somehow this homotropy Cartesian diagram that it's a fiber here which really plays the role of those graded pieces here of the graded monoid. So one should really think of not the homotropy colimit of an J-space monoid as being the underlying space, but the map from the homotropy colimit to the homotropy colimit of a point as being somehow the object which is interesting, which is relevant. Okay, that's all.